Welcome back, fellow gurus. I'm your host, Alex Bennett, and tonight we have an extremely important guest on our program. I speak with Mary Beth Tinker, one of the plaintiffs who challenged the idea of speech when she and her fellow classmates were suspended from school for wearing black armbands in protest of the Vietnam War. In one of the most impactful cases in the history of the court, Ms. Tinker takes us through the history and judgment of her case, as well discusses her work on Tinker Tours, where she discusses the most important free speech cases affecting students today and the First Amendment rights that they have under our Constitution. It is with great honor I welcome Mary Beth Tinker to the program. This is the Government Gurus.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this Honorable Court.
I want to welcome everybody back to the Government Gurus, and I have a very special guest. A lot of teachers know that I have Miss Mary Beth Tinker from the plaintiff in the Tinker versus Des Moines case. And this year, 2019, represents the 50th anniversary of the Supreme Court decision, and the AP College Board requires all students to understand and know the facts and the decisions behind the case. So I want to welcome Miss Tinker to the Government Gurus.
Thank you so much, Alex. I'm so glad to be here, and I really like the Government Gurus. I've learned things, and I'm hoping to learn some more as I listen to other episodes. Thank you.
Yes, I'll try to get more. I think I got like 14 or 15, but yeah, we try to keep it nonpartisan because there's plenty of that out there, and I just kind of want to, you know, some background is that I want to give kids another opportunity to hear the material in case they can't access the textbook, or they don't have one, or they just don't like to read and they just want to get the material we need for AP very quickly. That was the idea behind this venture. And sure enough, I think this will be 2 years. I'm pretty sure 2 years, a year, I don't know, that I've been doing this. So thank you. I really appreciate you coming on. So
thank you for inviting me. It's really great.
I had sent an email long time ago, and then you had sent me one back because the email had gotten lost. And I was like, oh my gosh, I was so excited. And you had mentioned that, and I didn't even realize it because we always, you know, it's the 50th anniversary. And so why don't you tell the viewers and the teachers out there what sort of special things are happening so that they can get their classrooms involved with it?
Yes, it's really great. We're excited because February 24th, 1969 was the Supreme Court decision by 7-2 in Tinker versus Des Moines. There was that famous ruling that neither students or teachers leave their constitutional right to free expression at the schoolhouse gate. And so it's been 50 years of students' voices. The teacher part of it was weakened through cases through the years, and actually the students' part of it was weakened also, but we can talk about that later. But the basic idea remains that students do have rights in the public schools, and students have a right to express themselves with limitations. Of course, all rights have limitations, and I have to talk with students about that also, of course, but the basic idea remains that students do have rights. So we're planning some really great things in Iowa. I've partnered with the Des Moines Public Schools and the Iowa History Museum there, and C-SPAN, Iowa Public Television, the ACLU, the Student Press Law Center. And so we're going to have some great events. And one of them is going to be live streamed on February 22nd from 12:30 to 1:30 Central Time. And I'll be there with my brother, John, and we'll also have a really great guy, Stanley Griffin, who is the son of a civil rights hero there, Edna Griffin. And we grew up with Stanley and Edna, and the civil rights movement had such a big influence on our lives growing up in Des Moines, Iowa. So Stanley will be there also, and also we'll be very honored to be joined by student journalists from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and two of their advisors. So that's going to be great also. And, you know, the message is young people expressing themselves is a very important part of democracy. This case set the standard, really, for the idea of student speech and the importance of young voices for democracy and for education. Yes, there is controversy, but without controversy, we have no education and no democracy. And so this case has to do with how to deal with controversy and how to encourage student voices in their schools.
Good. Okay, so that will be on the 22nd, and it was, you said 12:30 Central Time, right?
Yes, and people can find out the whole schedule by going to tinkertourusa.org, and they can see the time. There's a press conference and reception on the actual day of the anniversary, February 24th, at my middle school,
okay,
Harding Middle School, where I was suspended more than 50 years ago. I went there also when we had a big celebration for the 50th anniversary of being suspended.
Good.
That was quite exciting also. And they even dedicated a locker there to me and my brother. So I'm going to go back and visit my locker.
Oh, wow. So I was going to ask you, and some of the teachers maybe not don't know that you tour, and I hadn't until recently. Even, you know, you think that, oh, it's just a case on a piece of paper, and you forget that a lot of the plaintiffs are still around. And so Tinker Tour USA, why don't you explain to the teachers what that is and what you do in order to support the Tinker and this idea of the symbolic speech?
Sure. I'm a nurse, and I've spent most of my adult life working in hospitals, clinics, and schools as a nurse and as a nurse practitioner. I specialize in working with children and teenagers also, and I've worked at children's hospitals and in various capacities with young people. I was a trauma nurse. I started in the emergency room. And so, you know, after a certain point, I just got really sick and tired of taking care of kids who had absolutely no say in the decisions that policymakers were making that affected the lives of kids and that affect them so much, whether it had to do with, you know, gun violence or pollution and kids having asthma or housing problems, after school programs being cut because somebody decided there wasn't enough budget for the kids and they weren't going to be a priority. So I left the hospital about 6 years ago, and I've been traveling ever since full time to schools and school board conferences, law conferences, law schools, all kinds of places where I can talk about my favorite subject, the rights of young people. And I decided that telling young people the story of this case and talking to adults about the rights of young people was very important, because the rights of young people is really a human rights issue, and it's actually an international human rights issue. And we have a long way to go in our country to promote the rights of young people. And when young people do have a say over these decisions, it's really better for everyone. When kids have a say in their schools, and I know teachers recognize this, mm-hmm, it is better for everyone. The school runs better. You can just feel it walking into a school. One, that the kids have agency and they take part in their school.
Yeah.
So now,
yeah,
I just travel all the time and do that. It's my hobby and my life now.
Well, good. I didn't realize you were a critical care nurse. I'm going to give a shout out because my mother did the same thing. She started in 1973 in the ER and eventually worked her way up. But I have a great respect for nurses. And it just reminded me, I'm like, that's awesome that you're kind of doing the same thing my mom did right around the same time.
There are armies of nurses, doctors, social workers, taking care, picking up the pieces for a society that does not put the well-being of young people first.
And I think that's very interesting because at the time, you know, I think this is a good transition, the youngsters, because the voting age, I believe almost universally in 1969 was 21. However, you had the Vietnam War and the draft at its peak, in 1969. So a lot of these young men and women who, you know, went as nurses and filled other positions in the military really didn't have a choice in anything. They didn't, it couldn't exercise a constitutional right. And yet the government was there drafting them as a power through the necessary and proper clause. So it's interesting that listening to you and that the mentality that like you're fighting for the voiceless, and that's what kind of, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, remember that when we wore the black armbands to school in 1965, the boys, John, Chris, Bruce Clark, Ross Peterson, they were 15, 16, 17 years old. They were eligible to be drafted at age 18 and sent off to war, but they were being told that they could not vote until age 21, and also that they couldn't even wear a little black piece of cloth on their arm to say how they felt about that war. So it really is a youth rights issue, our case.
Yeah, so why don't you take me back? Because again, for government teachers and social science teachers, I mean, we just hear the facts of the case. I mean, it's like, oh yes, you know, Mary Beth Tinker and her brother wore black armbands, and then here's the case. So can you take, you know, the listeners, you know, step by step, like how this began with your brother and your friends, and then how did it escalate, and you know what happened in the school, and you know after.
In my family, with my brother and I, our actions grew out of our upbringing in the faith community. My father was a Methodist minister, and we later became Quakers when we were young teenagers. And my father really was an example of someone who stands up for what he believes, and He wanted to put his faith into action, and my mother believed the same. They were part of the social movement to make religion, you know, more real, to take it into our daily lives more in the actions that we take. And so they got involved in the civil rights movement of the late 1950s and early 60s. In their little town in Iowa, Atlantic Iowa, that meant noticing that the swimming pool didn't allow black kids to swim there in 1957. And my father went to the city hall and complained about that and tried to change it. And as a result, our whole family was put out of that town. My dad lost his church, and that's how we ended up in Des Moines. I was only 5 years old, but that's how I started kindergarten in Des Moines. So that's the way that we were raised, to really put our, you know, what we believe, to put it into action. And then in Des Moines, my father got involved again through the Methodist Church in the civil rights issues of the times. Their friends, the Griffins, Edna Griffin had a lawsuit at the Katz drugstore because they wouldn't allow black people to sit there, and they certainly weren't hiring black people. So she ended up taking that case to the Iowa Supreme Court. Well, that was one of my mother's best friends. And so I remember growing up going down to Katz drugstore and being on picket lines there. And my parents were not political radicals by any stretch of it. They were people of faith. They believed in their faith, and they believed in putting their faith into action. And there were a lot of people like them at that time. So really, our actions, I'd say, were rooted in the civil rights movement. The Tinker ruling is so rooted in the civil rights movement. For example, the substantial disruption test that was, you know, cited in the Tinker ruling, saying that, yes, students would have rights, but they could not substantially disrupt school with their speech, number one. And they could not impinge on the rights of others, number two. That substantial disruption standard comes directly from Mississippi Freedom Summer in 1964, when civil rights workers went to Mississippi, and some were already there, some lived there, to help register African-American voters. And three of them were murdered by the Ku Klux Klan, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman. Students there in Mississippi wore buttons to school to protest in 1964, before we ever wore our armbands, and they were suspended from their all-black school. And the case went to court, where they won at the appeals court. And so this was going on even before we wore our armbands, but later the Supreme Court in our case would cite that case. The name of the case is Burnside. And so so much of it is tied up to the civil rights. But in 1963, when the children in Birmingham had the Birmingham Children's Crusade, what a turning point in history that was. Martin Luther King said he had never seen anything like it. 2,000 kids almost were arrested there in that effort in May of 1963. To punish the children who were attacked by dogs and water hoses there in Birmingham, the Ku Klux Klan bombed their headquarters that September 15th, the 16th Street Baptist Church. And four little girls were killed in that bombing. Cynthia, Addie Mae, Carol, Denise. They were from age 11 to age 14, about the same age as me and my sisters. So all of that had a big effect on us growing up. But what happened was the day after the bombing, James Baldwin wrote a letter and said that what we should do is wear black armbands around the country and have a memorial service, have memorial services all over the country for these little girls who'd been murdered by the Ku Klux Klan. And that's what happened. And there was a memorial service in Iowa. And I have a photo of Chris Eckhart. He was the other plaintiff in our case. Chris Eckhart's father. I have a photo of him wearing a black armband at that memorial service there in Des Moines in 1963. So it's all woven together with kids who stood up and spoke up before us. And those were mostly teenagers and children of the civil rights movement.
With everything going on, and I remember, you know, I mean, obviously learning about Birmingham, I guess it's powerful because when, you know, once children get involved or are, you know, whether they're protesting or if they're victims themselves, it really changes the dynamic of, you know, the understanding, right? Because children are innocent, right? A little child isn't, you know, they're not part of, you know, they're not taught, they're not born with hate, and they haven't done anything really to anybody to have that type of violence on them. So that's early 1963, you get the idea, or at least you see it. And then you wore the armbands, you said, in 65. So why? I mean, that's very, very early on in Vietnam, where, you know, the Vietnam War really hadn't gone down the path that, it, you know, it wasn't, you know, the American public still supported it. It was very early on. So why so early? Is that part of the, you know, the being Quaker and not, you know, not wanting to see children go off to war? What, why so early in the conflict?
What happened is that in the summer of 1964, Freedom Summer, Mississippi, when Cheney, Horner, and Goodman were murdered by the Klan, the very same day that their bodies were discovered by the FBI, August 4th, 1964, off the coast of Vietnam in the Gulf of Tonkin, on the very same day, August 4th, 1964, in the Gulf of Tonkin, a U.S. Navy ship claimed that it had been attacked. And it turns out it had not been attacked. And there was a couple of days there with you know, issues around Navy ships possibly being attacked. It turns out it had not been. And I've talked to many, many veterans, and I've, you know, read a lot about the Vietnam War. Now, it's pretty well accepted that did not happen, that LBJ, Lyndon Johnson, was looking for a reason to win the public over to the escalation of the Vietnam War. They were already escalating it, but it was mostly in secret at that time. And so the Gulf of Tonkin, Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman, it all happened all at the same time. As a result, the U.S. Congress started escalating the Vietnam War and sending thousands of troops there that year in that fall and started the bombing. Now, at that time, when my parents heard about Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman, they went to Mississippi that summer. And I have no idea how they found places for all of us six kids to stay, but somehow they decided to go to Mississippi and to stand with those brave people who were speaking up for love and brotherhood and all the things my dad preached about. And so they came home on my 12th birthday and told us kids the stories of what had happened there in Mississippi and how the house they were staying in had been shot at and how they tried to go to the Methodist church there, the white Methodist church. And my mom was bodily picked up and put out of church and threatened. And so all of this had a huge impression on us kids. And we really got the example during those mighty times that are so much like today. We got the example of people who not only have strong feelings about the issues of the day, but are willing to do something about it and to take action. And I love the NCSS, the social study, the arc of inquiry leading to informed action, because it so much sums up what happened in our lives there in reality, because we were curious about the world, we found out more and more about it, and then it led us to informed action to eventually wear the black armbands to school, which we thought was going to be such a small action. And that's the funny part about it, because you just never know how your small actions will turn out. And that's what I like to tell kids. You know, history is largely made by the small actions of ordinary people. And that's certainly who we were.
Yeah, you have. Yeah. And so you had the black armbands. I think yours is still in the National Museum of American History. I believe I saw it there.
Well, it was over. It's at the museum. Well, what happened after?
Oh, is that the museum? Okay, is that the museum? I couldn't remember which museum it was. Okay.
We just heard this. There was a anti-war protest. One of the first national anti-war protests was in November of 1965. And so my brother John and our mother went, and Chris Eckhart and his mother went, and I don't know, I think about 20 people. And on the way back, they were talking in a van about what they could do back in Des Moines when they got back. And so the idea of wearing black armbands came up. We think it was first suggested by a man named Herbert Hoover, who is a distant relative of the president, Herbert Hoover. But Herbert Hoover, this Herbert Hoover in Des Moines, was a Quaker. And we think it was him who said, well, what about wearing black armbands? Black armbands, they are a symbol. They go way back through history of mourning for the dead and sadness. And we were certainly feeling very sad. And so the idea, you know, they brought it back to Des Moines. Some of the high school kids started talking about it. It kind of caught on at Roosevelt High School. And about 50 kids ended up signing up to wear the black armbands. But that all changed when the principals heard about it and got together and had a hastily called meeting and made a policy against black armbands. Now the numbers of kids that were willing to wear them dropped way down. And in the end, it was only a handful of kids that wore the black armbands.
And so, yeah, it has a peace symbol on there. I'm looking at the picture now of the famous picture of you and I believe that's your brother holding up the symbol. So they saw that you were going to protest the school, try to, you know, stop it, because, you know, even today they'll say, the school systems will say, well, they want to be inclusive. They don't want to have any disruption in the school day. So clothing and certain symbols and things can be denied. And obviously the black armband was one of them. So you wear it, the school suspends you. And so who brings up the idea about the lawsuit? Was that your father?
I'm not really sure how that came up. There was a woman in the Iowa Civil Liberties Union. It's really a story of journalism, our story also, because first of all, we would have never known what was going on in Vietnam or Birmingham or anywhere else, except for the brave journalists who had been there reporting. And someone in the Iowa Civil Liberties Union saw it in the newspaper, what was happening, and didn't think that was right. Her name was Louise Noun. And she's quite a woman in her own right, but she, you know, proposed it to the Iowa Civil Liberties Union that they offered to help us. And that's what happened. But you see, the administrators, they didn't really have a problem with us wearing symbolic speech or expressing ourselves. They just wanted it to be something that they agreed with. And that's where they got into trouble, because you have something called viewpoint discrimination. the government cannot discriminate in favor or against one viewpoint. It's a basic concept of our democracy. And the school was allowing other kids to wear symbolic, items. They had even allowed black armbands to mourn the death of school spirit. They were allowing political buttons. They had allowed Christian crosses on necklaces. So they had allowed various kinds. I think one of the buttons that I think someone held up in the school board meeting said that kids had been allowed to wear, said down with pants. So, they were really, wrong on that. And also the president of the school board was quoted in the Des Moines Register saying that our president has made a policy about Vietnam and we should support the president. So right there, he was wrong about that. That's not how civics works. That's not how democracy works. And I like to tell kids that, sometimes adults can be wrong. And that's an example. He was the president of school board, and he was wrong about that because a public official does not get to decide what everyone else, says or thinks. And that's a basic idea of democracy. So, it's good sometimes for kids to affirm with kids, and I know a lot of teachers do with your students, that sure, of course, we can be wrong too. It's very important because as a nurse, I know how important that really is because a lot of young people are, they need to disobey sometimes for their own well-being and for their own protection.
Yeah, and I think things don't change unless you challenge the system. And in the 1960s, the countercultural revolution not only was civil liberties for African Americans, Hispanics, women, you have the sexual revolution, you have the cultural revolution, which challenged the system, what the adults, the status quo. And you hit on a good message where people criticizing the president is unpatriotic and or, this idea of kneeling during the anthem or burning a flag. And this is what I try to, tell my students is that these are symbolic and these are acts that are against the government. It doesn't mean you're not patriotic, but I see with like kneeling for the national anthem and what you've went through about not being patriotic or you should support the president in this and just let it go. And there's parallels that these ideas still conflict because they challenge the very notion of what the United States is. And what you guys were doing was challenging the president in right during the Cold War and saying that this is wrong, and at a point to where the Americans still believed communism was truly the greatest threat in the world and to American democracy, and maybe it was, but the actions of the president, which will turn out a few years after this case, in I think 1973, with the Pentagon Papers leak, that yeah, everybody was lying to the American people. So you challenged the system in a very small way, but that small way turned out to be basically one of the most important decisions in the history of the country because it not only gave students the right to protest, it also recognized speech as symbolism.
Well, yes, it was very important because of those reasons and the affirmation that youth voices are very important and need to be respected. And they are part of our democracy. And so I like to encourage young people to speak up and stand up. They have strengths that are different sometimes from those of adults, and they should be honored. The kids know they see through the hypocrisy sometimes. They have, it's like a seventh grade girl told me recently in Ohio, she said, I think we're just fresher. And I said, yes, you are fresher, and you see things with fresh eyes. You haven't gotten accustomed to the really, unfair way that we do things a lot of times in our culture and the hurtful ways. So, yes, people misunderstand patriotism a lot of times, but we felt that we were being patriotic towards the Constitution. I think that's more important.
It is. I would agree with you. And so what, people, dissent is not, like I said, unpatriotic. It's one of the most patriotic things you can do is dissent against the government or policy that you might feel is unjust. And this, your suspension, it was clearly unjust, and the court agreed with you. So how did, I'm always curious, how did the student body react to you wearing, was it more just the school system reacting, or did the students support you, or were, did they call you unpatriotic? I mean, what was the reaction of the town and the school system?
The students at Harding Middle School, where I was, mostly ignored what I was doing. I had a petition I was supposed to pass around that us kids had worked up, you know, saying we should have our right to wear our armbands. And I think I had two kids that signed it. They both later crossed their names off, I think. But, you know, I was busy going roller skating with my friend Connie and going to slumber parties and studying for math tests and things like that. And I guess the other students were too. But, and also, as you said, it was really the beginning stages of the war. About 1,000 U.S. soldiers had been killed by that Christmas, 1965, and eventually there would be, of course, over 58,000 and 2 to 3 million or more Vietnamese. So it was in the very early stages of it. But, you know, I remember being in classes that day and really nothing happened. My math teacher was the one who sent me to the office, Mr. Moberly, who was one of my favorite teachers. And, where he got into trouble later in court was that the day before he had spent most of the hour talking about the armbands, and because it had come out in the paper and how students would be sent to the office if they wore an armband, and they shouldn't wear an armband and shouldn't protest. And so if anyone had disrupted the school day, it was Mr. Moberly. And that really made a big difference in the ruling. I was reading something by our lawyer, Dan Johnston, recently. And I have a lot of primary sources, by the way, on my website. It's called tinkertourusa.org. And teachers can go in there and find the whole schedule of the anniversary and primary sources and other things that might be helpful. I have, curriculum that's out there about these issues also. So, you know, Dan Johnston said at the 30th anniversary, I was just reading an article by him, that if the school could have proven that we had substantially disrupted school with our armbands, it could have been a whole different ballgame. And the lawyer for the school board was talking with Dan Johnston in this article, and he said, yeah, my job was to go and try to find some kid who had, you know, who would testify, or a teacher, or anybody, that school had been substantially disrupted, and they could not find anyone. So that really made a big difference. But there was also this, you know, viewpoint discrimination issue, which really helped us in court. Well, Thurgood Marshall also helped us. And you can hear the oral arguments that are very interesting. But Thurgood Marshall asked the school board attorney, you know, how many kids were suspended? And he said, well, 5. But he said, but more than that wore the armbands to school. And so Thurgood Marshall said, well, how many actually wore the armbands? And he said, well, 7. As the Thurgood Marshall said, well, are you telling me out of 18,000 students that 7 students disrupted your school district? And it was pretty clear that there really hadn't been a disruption of school.
And especially with a black armband, it's interesting that it got brought up. And so you made it through most of the day before your teacher had sent you out, and you said it was your favorite teacher, correct?
Yeah, I was suspended after lunch. Chris Eckhart was over at Roosevelt High School. He went immediately to the office and told them that he's wearing a black armband. He knew about civil disobedience and that, so he immediately went to the office. And some of the kids over at that school were harassed a little more. I think the vice principal told him he would never be able to go to college because colleges don't like kids like him. Well, he ended up getting a master's degree. But John, my brother, was suspended the next day, and 5 kids total. Chris Singer was suspended at Roosevelt, and Bruce Clark. My little brother and sister, Paul and Hope, Paul was in 2nd grade and Hope was in 5th grade, and they wore black armbands the same day that I did. And our father really didn't want us to do that. He said, I don't know if you kids should wear those armbands because the principals, you know, it's not easy for them. And they've made a rule But we knew something about our father. We knew that he believed that you should follow your conscience. And so we said, Dad, it's our conscience. We feel really strongly about this war. And my brother said, you know, I might get in a little trouble for this, Dad, but, you know, I'm not going to get killed like some people are in the war right now. And by this time, also, our family were more involved with the Quakers. So my dad remained a Methodist minister all of his life, but we were involved with the Quakers. But, I mean, some people got really mad about us wearing the armbands, and some people threw red paint at our house, threatened to bomb our house, just crazy things. I was really surprised. We had just stood up for peace, after all, at Christmas time. You know, so that part was kind of shocking. But still, we always felt that, well, it was nothing like the kids in Birmingham. At least they didn't bomb us and kill us.
Today, there's still people with, you know, the threats. And unfortunately, what happened in D.C. a few weeks ago with the Native American and the Covington kids, they got received threats. And it's just like, it's just shocking. But it just seems like some of the issues and the protests and things don't change, but reactions are still the same even 50 years later. And you just sometimes question, it's just like, well, and people are just so threatened by the challenge of the system. And it was a very minute challenge. And I wonder sometimes if the school district just didn't do anything, would we still have, you know, how long would it have taken to recognize symbolic speech throughout and the students' rights? And like you said, they've been diminished through multiple cases since. And sometimes, unfortunately, I think the most recent one or the one they compare with symbolic speech with students is Morris versus Frederick with the bong hits for Jesus at across the street during a school parade, which was not going to be constitutional. We have clothing restrictions, and, you know, you can't promote alcohol, tobacco use, drug use, you know, violence on shirts and things. And so some of it you would think is good, you know, for the disruption and just the sheer problems that would cause amongst the student body. But yeah, I think most of my students know Tinker versus Des Moines. And the next one they think about and they get angry with my journalistic students is Hazelwood.
I know Hazelwood, and you should have Kathy Kuhlmeier on sometime. She speaks quite a bit. In fact, she was just testifying in Nebraska this week in favor of legislation to protect student journalists. It's an effort all over the country called New Voices, for legislation to be passed, and it has been passed in 14 states to protect student journalists. And it basically says, you know, in our state, we're not really going to go by Hazelwood. We're going to go by the Tinker standard. As long as it's good journalism and it doesn't substantially disrupt school and impinge on the rights of others, students will have their rights in journalism. And I'm excited during the anniversary, we're going to be in Des Moines and really featuring student journalism there, because Iowa has that type of legislation and has for some years, whereas some of the students coming up, like the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students who are journalism students who are coming from Florida, they don't have that kind of legislation in Florida. And some students are coming from Texas also, and they're testifying there in Texas for this legislation. But yeah, there were three cases after ours at the Supreme Court about that had to do with student speech rights. And all four of our cases, by the way, are ACLU cases. The ACLU, they go to the Supreme Court more than any organization, the ACLU.
Yeah, I'm a proud member, card-carrying member of the ACLU, and sometimes they're just there about the Constitution, and they're a fabulous organization, and one that, you know, they'll take up any right or any issue on anything, and they sue quite a bit.
Yeah, well, they do a lot to stand up for the rights of young people in a variety of ways. They've challenged shackling, you know, practices. They've challenged solitary confinement for young people, mistreatment of confinement. So they really stand up for young people in many ways besides the area of speech rights.
Yeah, I agree. And so we're coming up on 40 minutes, and I told you I wouldn't keep you that long. So I want to thank you for coming on, but I want to, in closing, I want you to, if you could, I guess, give any advice or overall advice, what would you say to students today about Tinker and the case?
I'd say to students that you are living in mighty times and there is so much going on. And when you find an issue, or probably you already have, that you feel strongly about, and you can find out what's already going on in that area, and then join up with people, whether it has to do with, you know, the climate, the environment, racial justice, what, so many things that you can jump in. Your school, situation in school. Some kids I was talking to from Wyoming yesterday, they really care about the early release time on Friday at school, and they want to try to change that. I mean, whatever it is, you can get involved in some issue. And when you do, life becomes very interesting and meaningful, as I'm sure so many of you have already discovered. And as I say, sometimes it's even fun, and you get to meet a lot of great people, like I'm meeting you, Alex, and all of the teachers and students listening. And so thank you for having me today. If anyone ever wants to reach me, just write to me at tinkertour@gmail.com, and I'll be glad to write you back.
Thank you. And if you're lucky, maybe your case and your name will be etched in the history of the United States forever. So, Ms. Tinker, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And here's to the First Amendment. It's for kids, too. And I'm so glad that young people are learning their rights and using them. Thanks again, Alex. Take care.
You too.